Welcome to the podcast for St. Andrews Community United Methodist Church, a loving, caring, overcoming community of faith where our mission is making disciples of Jesus Christ.
Welcome to our St. Andrews podcast. We are so glad that you have joined us today, and we are starting a new series today, which I am very excited about. We are into November. It's hard to believe that we are looking at the end of this year, 2019, and as always, I am so glad to have my friend and co-host in studio with me, and you have been with me all year long. We've been doing this for a year.
Can Woo-hoo, you believe yay. That? Yay. Balloons, confetti falling from the ceiling,
yes,
our
exactly.
one-year anniversary of podcasting.
Oh, isn't that great?
It's amazing.
I know. It really is. It's something to really celebrate. We've done a lot of things, had some great special guests on.
Absolutely.
And really learned a lot about who God is and how He is always at work in our lives. And so, D.A., I'm excited to have you here today. Tell us how you're doing.
I'm doing well, Stephanie. Thank you so much. It's a great time of the year. I just love this time of year. And I'm sitting here just thinking, if she doesn't say this is our one-year anniversary, I'm going to bring that up because we started this as a step of faith, thinking that it would be a way to maybe connect with some people, and it's been awesome to watch how God has, each week as we look at the statistics on this, that there are more people listening in more places, and we just thank God for that opportunity to have a heck of a lot of fun while trying to do things that are meaningful.
It's so true. We've had people from Switzerland and Qatar and all over the world listening. It's very exciting.
Which is great that people in Switzerland and Qatar can speak Oki. I'm just so excited about they're probably going, who's that heck I got on there every week? I don't But wow, what a blessing it's been.
It really is. It's such
and I'm excited about this series. When you came and approached me with this idea, I said, this sounds really good, so I'm excited about what we're going to do today.
Yeah, so friends, we are starting this new series called Shine, and this is really coming from the idea and the knowledge of how a diamond is formed. I was just at a girls' youth retreat a couple of weeks ago. And
featured
I was,
speaker, you're being humble.
Well, sort of a featured, I don't know how featured it was, but I was sharing with them some research I had done on diamonds and how they are made, and it just kind of blew my mind how God creates something so beautiful. And so let me give you just a little background on that. So diamonds start out as carbon near the center of the earth, okay? So, and this carbon is under the amount of weight and pressure that would be equivalent to 4,000 grown men.
I'm guessing those are men like my size, you know?
Are you a grown man? Yes.
Okay. I'm grown more than some.
Oh, so 4,000 grown men, which I can't even imagine having that kind of pressure on your toe, let alone on this piece of carbon. So then also, not only are they under this pressure, but they're experiencing the heat that is 2,700 degrees Fahrenheit.
Wow.
Like, that's hot.
That's unimaginable.
That is not even, I can't even fathom. And so you got the heat, you got the pressure, and you got this carbon. And then the heat and the pressure actually changes the molecular structure of the carbon. So it doesn't just, it's carbon is not just this different form sort of and becomes a diamond. No, that heat and that pressure literally changes its makeup.
Right. It's not like heat on water that turns it to steam. It's still H2O.
Exactly. It literally changes its molecular structure. And so the other thing is, so now you've got this carbon that's turned into a diamond, but it's mostly at the center of the earth. And a diamond doesn't do any good at the center
Can't
of the earth.
Can't find them there. Yeah.
No, exactly. Because really a diamond has its beauty in the fact that it reflects light. Mm. So at the center of the earth, you're not reflecting any light, so you don't get to see the beauty. So God makes this substance called kimberlite, and kimberlite creates a tunnel from where that carbon is turning into a diamond to the surface of the earth.
Mm-hmm.
And then through the lava, so this extra heat pushes up the diamonds to the surface of the earth, and voila, now we get to experience the beauty of the diamond.
One of the amazing things I think of as I hear your story, we've watched a show on TV about people that kind of hunt crystals and diamonds and precious gems, and to know that that comes from the center of the earth up to, you know, 10,000 foot mountains.
Yes.
I mean, that's amazing.
Right. It's so, not like it just comes to Oklahoma, surface sea level. You know?
I know a good place they could come up if they needed to. <do that. laughs>
You've got an address you could give them.
Subdivision, like something.
Exactly. So I love this too. But then also we think about the beauty of the diamond coming in its reflection of the light, but also the diamond is one of the strongest substances. Mm-hmm. So it's not just beautiful, but it's strong. And
right.
I think that just correlates to who God creates us to be, that a lot of us feel like this black, yucky mess when we get started.
Right.
But God makes a way for us to truly reflect his light, and then the world can see the beauty of who he is. And I just think that's really, really cool. And so that leads us into this next series of Shine. And we have our first special guest, which I am so excited
yes.
that he agreed to come and do this with us, because he has an incredible story and he's doing incredible things through the power of the Holy Spirit. And his name is, I will not make you wait any longer, his name is Keith Howard.
Yeah, I bet people were wondering who that other
voice right, exactly.
is in the background.
Who is that? Who is there with us? So Keith is the president, CEO of Circle of Care. And I know Keith is going to tell us more about Circle of Care here in a minute, but I just want to say hi, Keith. How are you?
I'm good.
Good.
Thanks for having me on. This is great.
Oh, gosh. I'm just excited about it. Can you tell us just a little bit about yourself, maybe where you grew up, tell us about your family, whatever you want the listeners to know?
Yeah, that'd be great. So I'm an Army kid. So I grew up a little everywhere. My mm-hmm. my dad was in the military for the first 15 years of my life.
Wow.
Oklahoma City was always home base.
Okay.
But we would travel all over the world, Germany, Arizona, Texas.
Oh, wow.
And Oklahoma.
Places. And Oklahoma.
Yeah. And Oklahoma. Right, exactly.
And then we came back here when it all ended.
Yeah, yeah. Wow, that is cool. So you've seen a lot of the world then.
Yeah. Yeah, I was able to. Just fortunate my parents were really good about that for us. And
mm-hmm.
Came back here in high school. Did high school in UConn and then college
yeah.
in Edmond.
Oh, nice. So at UCO?
Yeah, UCO.
Yeah, very good.
Yeah, that's so spent
awesome.
Those 7 years here and then took off to Texas after I got married.
Okay.
Spent a number
we'll
of years
we'll forgive you
there.
For that.
I know.
Do we forgive him for that?
Well, good football players come from Texas to Oklahoma.
Okay, that, so we're okay with that.
That's what we're excited about.
Yeah.
That's good. So, Keith, tell us a little bit about Circle of Care for our listeners who really don't know much about it.
Yeah, so Circle of Care has been around 102 years, and we were really just
wow.
formed out of the heartbeat of a group of Methodist women who saw in the community kids who needed help.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm.
And instead of looking around and saying someone should do something about that,
uh-huh.
they were the someones.
Oh, wow.
And so they became the someones who did something.
Oh, and I
love
they
began
that.
To launch an orphanage here in Oklahoma City
mm-hmm.
and meet the need. And just out of that birthplace and that DNA that we're the someones who do something,
yeah.
we've continued to evolve over the last 102 years and meet children and families where they're at in the
wow.
community.
Isn't that amazing to think in, it would have been 1917,
1917,
right?
Yeah.
I mean, think how much change Circle of Care has seen
right.
in that 100 years. That's
well,
crazy.
Well, and, you know, I'm just kind of a history fan, and if history, my memory's right, 1917 was World War One.
Yeah.
So,
right. yeah, exactly.
Wow.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Ooh, I love that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, perhaps some of our listeners, when they hear Circle of Care, they're not exactly sure, but Circle of Care is one of the ministries that we support in the Oklahoma Conference of mm-hmm. the United Methodist Church. And can you just kind of tell us what some of those agencies are in Oklahoma mm-hmm. that people may have heard of that are under the Circle of Care umbrella?
Yeah, the different programs. So I like to explain it like a river.
Mm-hmm.
So we're all standing on the edge of this river, and we see kids and families going by.
Mm.
And so in the middle of the river is really like the crisis point, and that's mm-hmm. foster care for us.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And so we have a foster care team around the state in 7 locations
yeah.
who are getting in and trying to rescue as many kids as possible.
Wow.
But that's really the crisis point. Like, let's try to get as many kids safe as possible.
Right.
Uh-huh.
But then when you look at this river, there's some kids that make it on past us, and we don't
mm-hmm.
catch them.
Uh-huh.
And so we move on up that river, and we see in our preparation for adult living program young people who are aging out of foster care at 18.
Yeah.
We don't have the support system.
Yeah.
And so we're trying to grab those kids now and saying, hey,
yeah.
we missed you here, but we're trying to grab you here.
Right.
We want to launch you to adulthood.
I love that.
And both of those are really intervention,
mm-hmm.
but at the same time, someone has to say, why are there so many kids in the river?
Yeah.
And so at Circle of Care, we move
yeah.
the opposite direction. And we're trying to figure out where the hole in the bridge is, right?
Oh, yeah.
Why are kids falling into this river?
Yes.
And that's our Pearl's Hope program for single moms in Tulsa. And so we're saying, hey, let's bring single moms and their kids into our program, and let's keep kids out of foster care. Or if a kid is in foster care, let's get them back with their mom. And let's start to solve some of these societal problems and keep families together so we don't have to spend all of our resources and effort right there in the middle of the river in the crisis of foster care. And so we have those three programs where we really try to reach a child or a young person or a family wherever they're at in that spectrum. And then we just launched counseling in 2019.
Okay.
And our goal with counseling really is prevention as well. Let's start to get into the homes. Let's start to work with families. Let's start to figure out what's going on and help prevent some of the kids going into care or maybe aging out of foster care and some of those things. And so for us, that's our four programs, foster care, PROS Hope, PAL, and counseling.
So to help our listeners know, what are the seven locations that you have here?
So seven locations. So
it's
we're
a test now. You
it's
gotta
a test.
Yeah,
I got to like count on my fingers. Let's see who I'm going to miss. So we're in Oklahoma City. We're in Tulsa. But we're also in Ardmore, Woodward, Enid, Tahlequah, and Gore, Oklahoma.
Wow. Okay.
Awesome. And so, again, that's what Circle of Care is and what y'all are trying to do. And maybe some of this people are starting to connect dots. It sounds familiar. I've heard about this, but I've heard about it from more than just the church. Some of our listeners may recognize your voice and your name, and they go, hey, that was a guy that was on the Home Sweet Home segment of Good Morning America. And if they want to see that, they can actually go to the Circle of Care website, circleofcare.org. But tell us a little more, because this isn't something you do to encourage other people. This is something your family is committed to. So tell us a little more about what led you to adopt. What would you say to others that would be considering being foster parents or adopting?
Yeah. So, I mean, in all honesty, I went at it kind of kicking and screaming. You know, I really felt like I was doing my part. You know, I think as Christians, we do that sometimes. Like, well, God, I'm doing my role. Why would you ask me to do something else? And usually our role falls in our comfort zone.
Exactly.
Like, when God calls us out of that, we're like, ah, well, God, don't you see what I'm doing? And so for me, that's what it was. For 7 years, I was working in this space of foster care, and I was exposed to it. And every day I feel like God kind of knock and say, hey, what about your home? And I always had a ridiculous excuse, right? Like, at one point I told God, you know, I have an office in my house. I was like, that's an office, God. That's not a bedroom.
Exactly.
And God's like, are we really having this conversation? Like, you need an office over a bedroom for a kid?
I thought I was the only one God talked to like that.
And so I always had some, like, lame excuse. And at some point, my wife and I, we just really had to look up at each other and say, we're either going to obey or we're going to disobey. Like, there's really not an option there. And so we just felt like God stirring our hearts. And we went into it like most people. We had a list. We said, all right, God, if we're going to do this, this is what it's going to look like. And so we want a kid this age, and we don't want diapers. And, you know, we had two girls, so give us a boy. And God blew that whole thing up. Like, he said, just follow, and I'll figure this out. And,
oh, my gosh.
Such a great statement of faith. I mean, I think you're exactly right. We all enter into this with, okay, I will do it on my terms.
Yes, here it is.
True.
Here's how it's going to look. And so that's what we did. And then really, God just broke our hearts. I was running a shelter for kids in Texas at the time. And so shelter environments, you typically see sibling groups and teenagers because those are the hardest to find foster homes for. And so what I would see is sibling groups, when they would leave our shelter after 90 days, they would get split. They'd go to two to three different foster homes. And so there was a sibling group that came in August of 2012. And, man, my heart was just turned toward them. And really, I shouldn't even have taken them. It was a Friday night. Child Protective Services calls us, and my shelter director was off for the weekend. She'd already allowed several of her staff to be off. So we were staffed exactly where we needed to be. We couldn't take any more kids. The inn was full. And I remember they called, and I looked at the schedule, and I knew if I worked till 11 o'clock that night, and if I came back tomorrow, and then I came back on Sunday, that I could say yes. And this is another moment when I was just being silly with God. And I literally put the phone on hold. And in my office, out loud, I said, man, Jesus, what do you want me to do with this? And a long time ago, I told God, don't talk out loud. That'll mess me up. Just tell me in my spirit. And I mean, clear as day, what I heard in my spirit was, are we really having this conversation about your weekend being inconvenience? Do you want to have that conversation? And I out loud, I said, crap, Jesus. I'm not asking you anything else.
You talk just the way I do. This is my brother right here.
I was like, I'm not asking you anything else.
Right.
And I picked up the phone. I said, hey, you bring those kids to our shelter, and we'll serve them. And the one and only time I've ever called my wife to meet me at work to help receive kids was that night. And so she came up and she saw these kids, and our heart was just turned toward them. And we just happened to be going through the process to be foster parents at that point. We were going through the licensing process, but we still had our list. Yeah. Our list hadn't changed. It was not four, that's for sure. And just over the next 60 days, God just stirred our hearts for that. And so on Halloween night, 2012, our four kids came to us, and our goal was to reunify. Mm-hmm. We worked with mom and dad, and we still have a relationship with mom and dad. We see them three times a year.
Wow.
But after 2 years, it just wasn't possible. Mm-hmm. And so at 2.5 year mark, we were able to adopt all four into our family.
Wow.
Oh, isn't that amazing?
Yeah, and I was going to say, if we're really like the, after Jesus spoke to me, I would have still said, but what if my wife says no? And maybe would have been silently kind of hoping.
Yeah. They're still an out somewhere.
Right, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Gosh, that is great.
When I think back at the story, I always think to myself, like, no one would have known if I'd said no.
Yeah.
And no one would have blamed me. Our shelter was full.
Right.
Yes, right.
And it wasn't my job to work the shelter.
Yeah.
And so I could have missed our story just with that simple no. And it was just a simple 2 to 3 minute decision that changed our lives. And I just look back on that like, wow, God.
Yeah, that's pretty big.
I don't want to get lost, and I know Stephanie probably has another question. I just want to say thank you.
Yeah.
Oh, thanks.
Thank you for being obedient to God, and thank you for loving children.
Yeah. Thanks. Yeah. I second that. Wow. And what a testimony, really, to obedience. Somebody once told me not that long ago, they said, delayed obedience is still disobedience. And I thought, oh, that's good. So, yeah, exactly. You know, you obey or you don't. And I love it that you obeyed. So I love it that DA mentioned just a few minutes ago the Circle of Care website. If you missed that, circleofcare.org. I had a great time checking out that website in preparation for our meeting and seeing the videos, the testimonials of how people have come from really a place of dark, dirty carbon to really becoming these shining lights of God's love. And so I would encourage all of our listeners, go to that website, check it out, because God will move on your heart as you are watching those videos. But I loved your mission statement, and I wrote that down here so our listeners could hear it. It says, our mission is to provide Christian help, healing, and hope to children and families in crisis to ensure a safe, healthy, and spiritual future. I thought, wow, that is all-encompassing.
Yeah.
And I love your illustration of the river. That is just perfect. You're looking at all points of the river. How do we help, and how do we help wherever it's needed? And I think that's great. Can you tell us, you told us a little bit about the different aspects of Circle of Care. And so obviously within each one of those, we see Circle of Care fulfilling that mission. Are there any other things that come to mind when you think of that mission? Stories, things that really have stuck in your heart that would help our listeners know how you fulfill that?
Yeah. So, you know, I think back to the different lives we've been able to touch over the years, and 102 years is a lot of lives.
Yeah.
And so we're constantly hearing stories from people who, you know, grew up in our children's home when we were more residential, or our boys' ranch, and those are always great. But also just look at, like, just the hope we give people that maybe came from a place that they didn't have it.
Mm-hmm.
So in the last 2 years, we had a mother come to our Pearls Hope program just out of a pretty broken situation, and she was 45 years old.
Wow.
And we realized she didn't have a GED.
Wow.
And so we started on a path toward a GED, and the day she graduated was huge.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And I remember we just celebrated with her, and we just applauded her and praised her for crossing this huge mountain at 45.
Yeah,
something that
amazing.
She probably thought would never happen.
Mm-mm.
And I think that kind of just is a story that illustrates the hope and the help and the healing we're bringing every day, whether it's the 5-year-old who comes into foster care and needs a safe home, or it's that 45-year-old mom who came to us at a place of hopelessness without really the realization that there is a roadmap and we can help you. So many people in those situations, that they don't know what the roadmap is. And so we think, well, they'll just pick them up by their own bootstraps, or they'll just get off the ground. They'll figure it out.
Yeah,
well, they can't.
No, they can't.
They don't have a GPS.
Mm-mm.
They don't know what figure it out looks like.
Mm-mm.
And so really our team's just coming around those individuals.
Yeah.
I mean, even the young adults in our POW program, same thing.
Yeah.
And just coming around them and trying to relaunch them and help them see what the blueprint is.
Yeah.
That no one's ever shown it before to them. So.
Yeah. Oh, man, that's good.
I'm sitting here just doing a little math, thinking again of the 102 years.
Yeah.
And it's like, if you just multiply that out, it's like over a million children have been helped in that 100.
Wow.
And I'm guessing it's more than that. But most people, we just think, wow, a million is a really big number. That's that's a lot. But that's a million.
Yeah.
Even if it was 100, even if it was one, we would thank God and celebrate.
Oh, absolutely,
But it's a million. You know, as an ordained elder, I've known about Circle of Care and been around it some. My first real exposure came in my first appointment. I was appointed as the associate in Tahlequah.
Okay.
And we thought Tahlequah was, you know, the pearl of Oklahoma United Methodism because we had a church, we had a Wesley Foundation, we had Camp Egan, we had the children's home in Tahlequah, and right down the road was Boys Ranch in Gore. And one of the things, some of my experiences, I remember there used to be some of the leaders there at the Boys Ranch that would bring boys to Day Spring Camp back when I did that. And it was really interesting to see how people responded to them when they began to learn their stories. Oh. I mean, you would have a student get up and give a testimony, you know, a 16-year-old boy, and he'd say, well, you know, I can't be with my parents because I started doing drugs and they kicked me out of the house and then I stole a car and the only option I had was prison or the Boys Ranch. And it just makes you so proud to know that. But the thing I remember about Tahlequah, the children's home was an amazing place. And when I think about the staffing they had there, David Allen was the director. His children were in the youth group I was leading. There was an ordained elder, Doug Williams, that was a chaplain there. And they had a school. And unforgettable name, James Bond.
James was still there.
Was the leader, the principal, superintendent. I don't remember what they call him in the school. But that was over 30 years ago. A lot has changed. A lot has changed. I'm guessing the school's no longer. They don't have an elder appointed to be a chaplain. What are some of the changes that have been made? Because if people said, oh, yeah, I went back to the rodeo at the Boys Ranch back in 1990, lots changed since then. What are some of the changes that have happened, say, in the last 25 years that people may not be aware of? I mean, originally, I think in 1917, these were orphanages. A lot has changed.
Yeah, a lot has changed. So great question. And we've really seen some strategic changes recently that were hard decisions.
Okay.
And so we speak about the children's home. We put it up for sale this last year.
I know. I was devastated when I heard that, but I trusted that was the right decision.
Yeah, and really it was. You know, what I tell my board is we make bold decisions in seasons of health, not in seasons of crisis. Anyone can make a bold decision when you're in crisis.
Yeah.
And we're really in a good place. And so looking strategically along, just across the landscape, you're right, we don't do orphanages anymore. And so really taking care of kids has become more community-based. How do we serve a kid in their own community? How do we get out there and serve that mom in that community? Or how do we have a foster home in that community where reunification is way more possible because mom and kid get to see each other versus bringing them to a campus? And so for us, we just saw that the campus is getting older, but it's not necessarily becoming more viable. That's not going to be a long-term option. And so we had to make the hard decision. And it's not a crisis sell for us. So it may take 7 years to sell. I mean, 200 acres is a big sell.
Beautiful property.
Yeah, beautiful property. And we're not just going to be like, oh, let's just short sell this thing because it really is just an intentionality of, hey, we're going to keep serving our kids on this campus and keep serving individuals. But at the right time, when someone comes with the right offer, we'll make that move. And for us, it's just a reinvestment in our future. And so we're going to reinvest those funds back in the programs and the things we're doing, our endowment, so we can serve more kids and more families. And really kind of a tagline internally we've talked a lot about is do more for more. And to do more for more, sometimes you got to let go of the things the way you've done it.
That's a hard lesson for people to learn. And I mean, are there other plans, say, with the Boys Ranch to do the same thing? Again, the Boys Ranch, if you've never been there, Stephanie, sits on top of this big hill that looks over Lake Tenkiller.
Oh, wow.
It's gorgeous.
Beautiful.
Phenomenal.
Gorgeous.
Yeah.
there's not, and I don't know that we'll ever sell any of that land.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
I think that will stay. I think our property in Tulsa will keep. Mm-hmm. We may look at liquidating some of the property in Tulsa. Mm-hmm. We have about 40 acres. We have 20 we've never developed.
Wow. Yeah.
So there may be at some point we look at that, but the Boys Ranch will probably stay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I think for there, we're just kind of reconfiguring what does the future look like.
Uh-huh.
So right now it's a foster care community, and it works great. We have several foster families who live at the Boys Ranch and serve kids within community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we've had some other ideas of how do we use that property and that space, maybe to create a retreat center for families,
right.
adoptive families
yeah.
to come, and kind of an Airbnb
yeah.
for fostering and adopt families to come spend a week. And like you said, overlooking
awesome.
The
great
lake,
idea.
Getting
yeah.
a respite.
Yeah.
So there's some different things I think we can do with the land that we haven't done
mm-hmm.
that we're looking at.
That's so good. And I love your thought about you've got to change as God calls us to do that, because so many times in the church even, we just get stuck in the ways that we've always done it. And it's almost like we just are standing backwards to our future. Like we're just looking back and we got to turn around, look towards the future and where God wants us to be. And I love that you guys are doing it. So I am very interested in the PAL program because I have a niece who I just adore, and she was adopted into my sister's family after she became an adult. She spent a lot of time in foster care, and she came into kind of my sister's family umbrella when she was in high school. And then it wasn't until just recently, about a year or two ago, when she was 18 or 19, that they said, we're going to adopt you, you know, as an adult. So that was really cool. When I was looking at the information on the website about the PAL program, I thought, this is great, because a lot of times when we think foster care, we think little kids who don't have a place to be. But there are so many upper teens and even adults kind of crossing over into that don't have anywhere to be. They don't have anybody to show them how to do life. So tell us about the PAL program.
Yeah, so the Preparation for Adult Living program really came out of the vision of a former children's home kid. Mm-hmm. So a current board member of ours, David Bill, he aged out of the children's home.
Oh, wow.
And so when he chose to come on the board back in the mid-2000s, his heartbeat really was that 18-year-old. And he said, hey, I want y'all to do something for the young person that was me who got a suitcase and a handshake, is what he says.
Wow, yeah.
And he said, who's going to help them?
Mm-hmm.
And so that was kind of the birthplace. And we were still residential at that point.
Okay.
So it was an easier feel. Like we would take kids who were aging out on our children's home campus and they would flow into the PAL program.
Mm-hmm.
As everything's just kind of transpired over the last 15 years, really we've focused more on the foster kid.
Okay.
And so across Oklahoma, 200 kids will age out of foster care this year.
Wow.
And a lot of those kids don't have the support systems.
Mm-mm.
And so we're really looking at those statistics. We know for kids who age out of foster care, only about 3% will get a college degree.
Mm-hmm.
Upwards of 50% will experience some form of homelessness, whether that's couch surfing or actual homelessness on the streets.
Yeah.
We know the young girls who age out of foster care are the number one target for human trafficking.
Yes.
Yeah. They're the most vulnerable for that.
Mm-hmm.
They have a higher pregnancy rate by 19.
Mm.
Kids who age out interface with criminal justice system at a higher rate. So there's all these horrible statistics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the common denominator and factor, what we see in statistics show us this as well, is not having the caring adult and the support system.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so it's not that they don't want to go to college. Again, they don't know the blueprint. How
do
you do it?
How do you do it? Yeah.
How do you go do a visit? And how do you fill out an application?
Yeah.
How do you enroll?
Right.
You know, they don't want to be homeless. They just don't have the support system to say, hey, Mom, can I come crash on your couch? And so for us, it's really looking at those statistics and saying, how do we change that? And how do we put the caring adults in place that help them and show them the blueprint and help them launch into college? And that may be technical school.
Yeah,
we don't even believe it's like a four-year degree. It's how do we give you the tools and then teach healthy relationships and how to write a different story? We also know kids in foster care, that wasn't their family's first exposure usually. Usually it's a repetitive cycle, a generational cycle.
Mm-hmm.
And so for us with that program as well, we're trying to break some generational cycles and say, just because your parents were involved and you were involved, it doesn't have to be the next level. And so how do you do that? And so for us, we get them there and we just really wrap around them and start to guide them. We get them involved with NSU or the technical school locally. We've had some that have had to go back to high school and get their diploma. But it's given them tools as simple as an ID. Most of these kids don't even have a state ID or a driver's license. So there's another parent issue, right? Like if you don't have a caring adult in your life who says, hey, we're going to get your driver's license. You're 19 and you're like, I don't have one of those. And how do I get one?
How do I do it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so it's really, it's rebuilding those pieces so that hopefully they can launch into adulthood and be successful.
So let me piggyback on that for just a minute, because I know there's obviously a need for foster homes in Oklahoma. And so that's one way people can be involved. But if somebody says, you know, that's not where God's calling me right now, is there a way for them to be involved in the PAL program so that they can be helping kids learn that roadmap? Do you need people's help in that area?
Absolutely. Yeah, we do need people's help. And so we have sponsorships, we have mentorships, we have opportunities for people to come help teach kids how to drive.
Oh, wow.
You know,
okay.
And take them, help them get their driver's license and things like that. So there's a lot of places strategically that people can plug into that program and be part of that caring adult system.
That's so cool.
That helps launch those young people.
Yeah, okay. Hope our listeners are hearing that.
Gosh, yeah. I was really glad you asked that question, because I was getting kind of lost in the answer. my heart breaks when I hear the stories, things that we take for granted. I mean, you know, I look at my own children, and it's like they have no idea about this.
Yeah.
And we've got a school teacher here in our church. And when she was in a junior high, she told me about a student that was homeless, couch surfing. Mm-hmm. And it's like, here in where we live, that happens, and it does. So tell us a few success stories, or about a group of siblings, or just an individual that. I know it would probably be hard for you to filter out just one, but share a story or two about the life change that Circle of Care has made.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we had a foster family as actually a staff member. A cool thing about Circle of Care, I ran the numbers about a year ago, and I haven't ran recently, but we had, it was like 13 or 14 of our staff have fostered or adopted.
Oh, wow.
Multiple had done other programs like this. And so it was like, we're not just like servants on a day-to-day basis with our work.
Right.
A lot of our staff's actually doing it. And so we had
A
staff member who had fostered these four kids and just loved on their mom. Mm. And the four kids went home. Mm-hmm. And so they worked with mom and dad on reunification and supporting them. Mm-hmm. About 11 months later, it broke down. Oh. And so they get a call in the middle of the night. And they had actually filled their home again with new foster kids.
Wow.
So they were full.
Yeah.
I mean, I think they were at like seven kids already.
Oh my goodness.
And they get this call, and Tulsa is saying, hey, we're going to remove these kids. Mm. They're like, oh, you're going to bring them here. And so then I get a frantic call like, hey, I don't know if we even can, but we're bringing those four kids here. And, you know, and I told them we'll put a camper next to our house, whatever we have to do to make this thing happen.
Right.
And ultimately those four kids were able to come. And so this family took on 11 to 12 kids in that season.
Whoa.
Holy cow.
And then
that's
they were
amazing.
Able to adopt all four.
Wow.
And what that foster dad kept saying to me was, there is no way these kids are going to go anywhere else.
Wow.
There is no way.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I will move whatever mountain has to be moved.
Ugh.
But these are my babies.
Yeah.
I love that.
And that's the passion we need for these kids.
Yeah.
The fight that says, hey, this is just not some kid, and they'll rebound or they'll be okay.
Yeah.
But hey, these are our kids. And so success for us was seeing that, we wanted reunification. We wanted mom to be successful.
Right.
Exactly.
But when it didn't happen, this foster parent said, we will do whatever, even though it was highly inconvenient.
Uh-huh.
I mean, nobody wants 11, 12 kids at a time. No. That's a lot.
Right.
My dad grew up in a family with 11 children. And it's like,
that's a lot of people.
A lot of, you know, Christmas presents to buy.
That's so true.
Exactly.
Oh, I just absolutely love that. Okay, so Keith, as we're kind of wrapping up the segment today, I really would like for our listeners to hear about how your faith in Christ has affected what you've done, the decisions that you have made, but also how it's been strengthened. Because just like we were talking about the diamond earlier, the beauty of it is obviously reflecting the light, which you and your family are doing. But it also is that God makes us strong, and he makes our faith strong. And I believe that all the different things in our life he can use for that good and that purpose. So tell us a little bit about your faith.
Yeah, absolutely. So for me, I mean, it's the cornerstone of why I do what I do. And and originally how I even got into child welfare, it was kind of a faith journey, and I was being pretty idealistic.
Mm-hmm.
I was on staff at a church in Texas, and I started looking around and said, well, if Paul was a tent maker, I should be a tent maker. And so I was like, what can I do? And God led me to Child Protective Services as an investigator.
Oh, wow.
And so I thought, well, this will be my season. I'm going to, you know, make tents and provide for my own salary and, you know, prove that this can be done.
Right.
And really what God was doing is it was just a holy disruption.
Oh, wow.
And I think
that's
he
a good
was,
word.
Yeah, he was wrecking my life and saying, hey, Keith, you thought I was calling you to pulpit ministry and church-based ministry, but just watch what the journey about to take you on.
Whoa.
And I think just that was a strengthening of my faith. Mm-hmm. Like, because then it wasn't in my hands. Like, uh-huh. To some level, I felt like I could kind of control the church side of it for me. I was like, oh, this is the path I'm going to take.
Yeah.
And then it all got just blown up.
Oh, man.
And God began to walk me through that journey. And every season, like, he teaches me something new to strengthen my faith. And so even when I was in Amarillo, Texas for a season, it was rough. And we had we had to do a lot of just God things.
Oh, wow.
But the only way we could raise the money we raised, it was God. The only way we could rebuild the programs, it was God.
Yeah.
And I remember shortly after moving to Tahlequah. And just looking at the mountain we had to climb at Circle of Care during that season of growing our foster care program and kind of fixing some of our other programs and some of the things we were working on. And I remember driving around Tahlequah and just kind of lamenting with God again, because that's what I do. I'm like, oh, God, I can't believe you put me here. What did you do? We had just fixed everything in Amarillo. I could have stayed when it was fixed.
Yeah. Right.
And instead, I'm here, and I'm back at the bottom.
We make changes in times of health, not crisis.
Right.
Like,
no, why?
That's right.
Exactly. And I just remember having that conversation, and again, I just felt like God said, he said, do you remember Amarillo? Mm-hmm. And I think what he was telling me, he was strengthening my faith in that moment of, hey, when you stepped into Amarillo, we never thought that would happen.
Mm-hmm.
He said, do you remember what I did? Mm-hmm. And I just remember thinking, all right, God, you got this. Like, this is always you.
Yep.
And so I just had to lay it back down and just say, okay, you'll do this thing. And so I think all through these different trials and things, God just strengthens us and he challenges us so that we're stronger and we're smarter and we're more equipped than we ever thought we were able to be equipped for.
Yes.
But that's why he takes us through the trials so that we can get on the other side of it and say, okay, it's not as scary.
Yeah.
Let's go for the next thing. Let's build the next thing you want to build, God.
Yeah.
And so for me, every day, it's Jesus, and I tell my team that. We're not perfect.
Yeah.
We're imperfect human people that are trying to figure out how to serve a holy God.
Right.
And we're going to fail, and we're going to mess up.
Yeah.
But we're going to point to Jesus every day.
Yes.
And at Circle of Care, that's what we want to do, is just point to Jesus.
Oh, I just love it. Point to Jesus.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, just hearing everything you say makes me glad to be United Methodist, particularly in Oklahoma. Thank you for what you're doing out there. As I'm listening to you, we just came through a series for our stewardship campaign. We called it Embark. And there were two things that we emphasized that I hear you saying. One definition of Embark is to begin a course of action that is important. And I think the work that you're doing, the work that we're doing as United Methodists, is important work. These are lives that are at risk, and if we believe in the fullness of the gospel with the power to change things, it does that. And the other thing, and I really hear this loudly, is to embark is to begin a course of action that is demanding. And to love these children and care for these children is sometimes demanding. It's sometimes inconvenient, and yet there's no hint of remorse, or maybe not this time. It's just always what we do is demanding, and we embrace that. Thank you so much for doing that.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I really do want to say a word of thanks to you, and especially to your team of people and all of the things that you guys do, because I'm sure you don't hear thank you enough.
Thanks. I appreciate that.
So we just really appreciate you guys. And listeners, I just want you to be encouraged today that if you are in a time where you feel like you're feeling the pressure and the heat, that I want you to trust that God has the power to use those things to make you into something strong and something beautiful that can reflect his light. And we have seen that today in the stories that Keith has shared and what he is doing with his family and how God is at work. So I hope you will be encouraged today. Friends, check out the Circle of Care website. I have no doubt that God is placing it upon some people's hearts today as they are listening that it's time. It's time to take some action.
I affirm that, yes.
It's time to be doing what God says, and even if your response is, oh, crap, Jesus. That's okay, too.
That's a start.
That's right. That's the beginning. That's exactly right. So I hope that you will heed that call today, because there is no doubt that God has good things in store. So friends, thank you so much for joining us. We always want to see you here on site at St. Andrews, and you can see us here at Sunday mornings, 8:15, 9:30, and 10:50. We also are online, both Facebook Live and YouTube Live at 8:15 and 10:50. So we hope to see you here sometime soon, and we do pray that you have a very blessed week.
We're so grateful that you joined us for today's podcast for St. Andrews Community United Methodist Church. We're located at 2727 Southwest 119th Street in Oklahoma City. So if you live in South Oklahoma City, Moore, Norman, Newcastle, Blanchard, Tuttle, Mustang, any of the surrounding communities, we would love to have you join us for worship. Service times are 8:15, 9:30, and 10:50. We hope to see you soon.